Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, August 15th, 2016. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Very good. Good morning.
And good morning to you. And Dave, how are you?
I am well. Good morning, sunshine.
Good morning. You know, no one has said good morning, sunshine to me for a long time. That was really kind of special.
Well, can't say that anymore. Or can't say that for a while, I guess.
No, can't say that for a while now.
Who was that? Was that the Mamas and the Papas?
Well, good morning, sunshine is something that shows up in various songs.
Hmm.
So, anyhow.
Good morning, sunshine.
We could do a musical series today, but we're not going to.
Danish-Norwegian band Aqua. No, it's got to be somebody before that, though.
But still, just as soon as you throw a Danish-Norwegian band into the mix, you know the video is epic.
Yeah. Lots of blonde hair.
Yeah, and bad green screens. But that's not why we're here today. John, I'd love for you to help me understand why all of these competitors to Apple Pay are going to be dismal failures. What's up with that?
Well, what set me off was, well, I learned on Friday that CVS Health, through CVS Pharmacy, is going to develop its own competitor to Apple Pay. And I thought, WTF?
Okay.
And we've had a long string of these kinds of events, starting with, as you recall, the MCX Consortium's currency. And a while back, we've been following currency closely. You have, and me, a little bit. And while it wasn't long ago, you wrote, currency rolls off its deathbed and into the grave. Currency failed because the idea was to access the individual's checking account number and bypass all those obnoxious credit card discount fees. And even as it was dying, Walmart saw the handwriting on the wall and moved over to its own system. And then we had Samsung developing its magnetic secure technology to trick the insecure magnetic strip readers into thinking a card had been swiped, which means it's subject to all the same vulnerabilities. And then CVS comes along and says, well, we're going to do that too. And it seems like every company wants to have its own payment system. Mm-hmm. The problem is that there's a lot of technology here that has to be put into place, and Apple is very good at that. So is Google through these NFC systems. But you've got to be very careful with these payment systems to protect the credit card numbers, to manage the data securely online. It's a very difficult process. And I'm appalled that so many companies think that, well, we can just duplicate what Apple did.
Well, I'm not surprised that so many companies are doing that, because that has been happening for a long time with all different types of Apple products.
And I think it's even more insane that a group that is most notable for its pharmacy has decided that it has the... Now, maybe they do, but I just doubt that they have the technical acumen to do it right, because every time you turn around, there's been some system hack, and big companies are hacked right and left, except Apple. And to collect all this data about the customers, to properly exploit it, to develop your own payment system, and then hope that people are going to come flocking to you, and they're going to come into CVS Pharmacy, and they're going to go, oh, well, you don't take Apple Pay, you take CVS Pay. So where does this all end? You end up with a situation where, you know, Sinclair gas stations and some mom-and-pop grocery stores, they all want to have their own payment system because they want to collect all this purchase information about you and profile it.
Well,
companies are more greedy than they know what to do with this information.
So there's a couple things that I'm curious about with your logic here. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think we should try and poke some holes in it. In terms of the per store method, right? Let's abstract it out a little bit, right? That's a time honored tradition. right? If you shop at Kohl's a bunch, you might get a Kohl's credit card. If you shop at Macy's a bunch, you might get a Macy's card, right? And, mm-hmm. and certainly if you shop at the same gas station or the same chain of gas stations, you might get a gas station credit card, right?
Sure.
And there's nothing inherently different about that versus doing their own, you know, wireless payment system, NFC-based payment system, because, you know, they want to collect that data. They've always wanted to collect that data. That's why they do this. They also want to engender loyalty, right? So if you have a, you know, a card for, well, I don't know, you know, Irving or Shell or whatever your mobile, whatever your local one is, you're more likely to spend money there than you are, you know, at the Exxon station across the street. So I use my mobile card and yeah, they give me a little bit of a discount, but really it's so that they can get all of my money spent on gas.
So you're referring to things the way they were in the past, right? Where you had a wallet and that's, kind of credit cards.
That's why I said, let's abstract it out. Payment, you know, brand specific payment method. And so they're right. In the past, it was a loyalty card or a credit card that engendered loyalty.
Sure. A company credit card.
Yep. Or a brand credit card. Or, right.
Sure. You know,
yep. And then, but now it can be a brand. Well, on Android, it could be a brand app, right? Because apps can access the NFC chip and do things that way on some of those phones. On the iPhone, no, it can't. So it has to be a separate device, you know, and then, you know, enter the, the whole Visa payments thing that we've seen advertised like crazy during the Olympics is a whole other deal. But it is, but what they're doing is they're giving you, you know, giving people like a wristband to use, and that's got your NFC stuff on it. Great, fine. I don't see anything wrong with companies wanting to continue to engender loyalty, because Apple Pay and Google Pay and Samsung Pay are doing exactly that, but not for the places you are shopping, right? They're doing that for the device you have in your pocket. And that's more ubiquitous than the places you are shopping, right? If you can use Apple Pay at 5 different merchants, or in my example, you can use Apple Pay at mobile and at Exxon, that doesn't help mobile or Exxon all that much, right? It helps them if they both support Apple Pay and the Getty station across the street doesn't, right?
Right.
Helps them in the sense of simplifying their finances and their technical expenditures and efforts. As I said in the article, you can have a consultant come into your office and go up to, with PowerPoint slides and talk about how you're going to collect all this data, and here's the infrastructure that's required, and here's all the branding, and here's all the value that's going to get out of it, and people are going to love this, and just write me a check for $41,500,000, and we'll make it happen.
Yeah,
that's where the breakdown occurs.
Well, I think brands are always going to want to do things to entice customers to shop at their store as opposed to their competitor's store. And payment method is a great one, because not only do they really lock you in with that, they can give you discounts that just are automatic. They know your purchase history so that they can, which they can do other ways. I mean, it doesn't have to be a payment method that they'd use to track your purchase history. And lots of places also grab your email address so that they can assign it to your account, or they have a separate rewards program like my Rite Aid, right? You know, my Rite Aid, I want to type my phone number in every time I go there, and I want them to collect, you know, my entire purchase history, because it saves me a ton of money, or so I think, right? So,
and that's the big thing. You have to feel like you're getting something for what you're giving up.
Correct. So there's that, right? And then I mentioned this whole Visa payment thing. Well, you know, I feel like that's the end game of this. It's not about Apple Pay or Google Pay, or it shouldn't be. It should be about, like, the merchant providers should be the ones doing this. Why is it that we're still abstracting away from that, right? Why, you know, and we're not, right, with Visa payments. But the iPhone won't let Visa Pay work. You have to use Apple Pay. And some Samsung or some Android phones might, I mean, I don't know that there's a Visa payments method for Android phones. I haven't researched it that much, but there could be, right? So I feel like that's the end game here. It's like Visa already has you. Regardless of what else you're doing, Visa has you, MasterCard has you, American Express, at least in this country, has you. Why are they not pushing harder on this?
You know, maybe,
and why is Apple pushing harder on Apple Pay? We haven't seen ads since what, in the fall of 2014, when the banks did some ads, like Chase and Citibank did their famous ads promoting Apple Pay when it first launched.
Yeah,
but I can't recall ever having seen an Apple branded ad for Apple Pay. I wonder why.
Maybe Visa payments is the answer to both of those questions, right? Maybe Apple was pushing hard on this, and then everybody sat down. I'm not saying this happened. I'm purely speculating. Maybe everybody sat down and the credit card company said, you know, this thing that you're doing, thanks for paving this path, but we're going to need to be the ones to do this.
Yep. That's totally plausible.
And they do hold the shackles, right? I mean, if MasterCard suddenly says, yeah, you know, this Apple Pay thing, we're gonna ride out whatever agreement we have in the contract term, and then we're done. That's really bad for Apple if that happens.
Yeah, something like that kills Apple Pay platform. Yeah,
right. So if that meeting has already happened and MasterCard or case in point Visa has said, yeah, we think we're going to do this on our own, and so whatever the term of that agreement is, my guess is it's, you know, 5 years or more, but you know, Apple looks at the long game, and if they've been told, oh yeah, in 5 years your thing doesn't work with Visa anymore, well,
then Apple's not going to be shouting it from the rooftops.
Well, they either are or aren't, right? It's either, okay, now we turn on full steam ahead and we make Apple Pay more important than Visa in 5 years or less,
mm-hmm.
or we acquiesce and choose and pick a different battle.
Yeah, that's a good point. If the latter happens, I guess we'll take the blame for it. Apple will take the blame and say, yep, well, there's another technology that had good prospects. You never advertised it. You neglected it, and now it's failed.
Yep. And Apple will take the blame for it, totally. But yeah, but so will Samsung Pay, and so will, right? I mean, so will all the others. If Visa, and that's the thing, is it's like, the more I talk about this and think about this, Occam's Razor says Visa payments trumps all and should. I mean, if I'm running Visa and if I'm running Apple, I might feel differently. But again, Apple's got different battles to, you know, this may not be all that important to them. It's not like somebody's coming in and saying, well, the iPhone, you're not going to be able to use that ever again. Okay, now they might double down and say, all right, it's on, let's go. You know, but Apple Pay, all right, fine. You know what? Fine. The problem is going to be solved. Yeah, how are you doing it? Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, let us know if you need some help. We've got some experience with this. You know, I mean, seriously, like, that's how that conversation could go. It's like, do we really want to fight Visa? Is that part of our core business? No, I don't think so.
No, but what Apple does want is to make sure that our iPhones are indispensable, so that they go with us everywhere and we use them for everything.
So now maybe the iPhone is the for gets a, you know, because of this deal. And again, there's so much speculation here, it's ridiculous. But I could see a deal being cut where Apple says, all right, we won't fight you on this, but we want a 2-year exclusive on Visa Pay. We're the only smartphone that supports it. That's a win-win for both sides.
Sure.
That's what they should do. I wonder if Apple is perhaps too distracted. I wonder if Jennifer Bailey, the VP of Apple Pay, has enough authority to push that, to get a word in edgewise at the executive team meetings and push that through. Is it a corporate, is it an executive team top priority? That's the question.
Right. That's the question.
I love how we went over the course of a 10-minute window from all these other services, what are they thinking, to figuring Apple's end game for surviving Visa Pay.
That's what Dave and I do.
It's what we do, man. It's 10 minutes of the fastest brain activity that you'll get in a week.
And see, this is why I wear goggles and a seatbelt when we record. As one does. Hey, I'd love to keep talking about this, but there's something else that I wanted to hit before we have to wrap up. And that's this, that today the big news is, hey, everyone, Apple is really invested in augmented reality. And people are talking about this like it's this big new thing, and holy crap, world, look what Apple's doing. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, really? this is something that we have known for months, and Apple has been telegraphing this to us for months, and yet today, all of a sudden, it's a big news thing. And I really want the take that you guys have.
Well, Brian Chaffin taught us how to read Cook Code.
Yes, he did. I love that Brian came up with the term Cook Code.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Cook Code is when Tim Cook says something in an affirmative way that's very vague, that doesn't pin Apple down, but suggests a line of reasoning that you have to decode in light of your knowledge of Apple and experience with Apple in order to kind of read between the lines and see what he's getting at. If you're not very good at deciphering Cook Code, then you just take it as sort of a vague political statement. But Tim Cook has done Cook Code in the past, as you mentioned in your article about augmented reality. But apparently, a lot of people didn't get it. And so when this recent interview came out, the Cook Code became more transparent and more revealed. And everybody went, oh, aha, now we understand.
Yep. Okay. I think that's an excellent way of summing up how I've been feeling. It's still, to me, still, it's just kind of funny that Apple has been telling us this for a while. Brian deciphered all of this for us beautifully a while ago too, and yet today people are jumping all over this as if it's a brand new thing.
What I thought was cool in your article was that you pointed out that for a long time, all of us on the TMO have been trying to figure out how this would instantiate itself in technology. And when none of us thought that Apple was going to get into a big goggle set that you hang on your face, but we did ponder whether it would be something that might be used in another way, maybe in, as you pointed out, in the Apple Car for some sort of visual reference or instrument readings or perhaps
navigation, whatever.
A more augmented section of reality. I remember one time I was driving in a snowstorm, and the snow was so bad it was clinging to the signs, and you couldn't actually read the signs. So imagine you're driving in a snowstorm where you have augmented reality, where you don't have to actually see the sign itself. There's an AR representation of that sign, so that you never have to worry about snow on it. Or things like that, or hard to difficult to see lights. I don't know, but whatever Apple's going to do, we know it's going to be something really, really cool and very, very helpful. And it's probably something that's going to be driven by the best AR device that you can have, and that's what you already have with you, and that's the iPhone.
And that's something that I speculate on in the piece that I wrote. I'll make sure there's a link to that in today's show notes. And my feeling is Apple is not creating a new platform for AR. They already have a platform for AR, and it's called the iPhone. It's the device that's always with you. They want to make sure it's your indispensable device. And if it's going to be in your pocket everywhere you go, you already have the tool you need to engage in whatever AR services Apple chooses to give us.
And maybe that links into mapping. Yeah, there was a article the other day, wasn't it, about who was it, Craig Federighi, who was talking about how fundamental mapping is to Apple technology. Mapping and AR are like,
well, your example
birds of a feather.
Your example, yeah, with AR is as soon as it's, because you, as you were describing that, and you said, well, what if you can't see the sign? You know, what if you've got something that's going to, you know, superimpose on the sign? Well, my thought was, why bother with that? We already have all this data in a map database, and if your car knows where you are, then it can just tell you about all of these things and more without signs even being necessary, let alone visible. You know, if you want to know the speed limit, there's an app for that, right?
What about the one that says next gas station 60 miles?
Exactly. Right. Well, that's the thing. It's right.
I mean, you've got trickier.
All of this data, but you know, we're seeing traffic, we're seeing all kinds of things that signs, at least static signs, are not all that great for, right? You know,
wouldn't it be cool if someday we didn't need road signs at all? that all the cars in the country had their own built-in signage system and navigation system.
John, you're forgetting that at some point, relatively soon, we're not going to be driving our cars anyway.
That's what I mean.
And then signs are irrelevant. It's not that we don't need to see the signs. Our cars don't need to see
them. That's what I meant.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so I'm kind of looking forward to this future where my iPhone handles all this AR for me and immerses me in my world in a new way, and my car does the same thing. Or more accurately, since I won't need to have a car, the car that I am calling to take me wherever I need to go has all this information.
So your autonomous car breaks down in West Texas, east of Sierra Blanca, where you have no cell phone tower coverage, and your car quits, and you get out of the car and you pull your iPhone out of the pocket, and it says no service, and you go, where am I? What do I do? And all the autonomous cars that are cruising by, the passengers are asleep, so they don't see you trying to hail them.
Well, John, your car, if it's broken down, I'm sure we'll have an automatic transponder that says, I'm in trouble. And then the next car that comes in range picks that up and stops.
The last known location alert.
And then we'll start having the news.
And it doesn't just have to be your last known location. I mean, if the car knew where you were going, then it knows the route it was going to take.
True.
So here's where I last reported in. And here's my planned route. I mean, right, we do this with airplanes all the time. Like, okay, we know it was supposed to fly there. Right. Now, it didn't, but at least we know where it was and where it was going, and we can really make some educated guesses about what might have happened. You factor in weather and other, you know, all these other data points. It's like, oh, well, it would make the most sense. If it didn't go that way, then there's a 60% chance it went left and a 40% chance it went right. Well, I mean, seriously, right? This is how that works.
Now you got to be thinking about highway patrol cars and whether those will be autonomous.
Well, there's certainly...
Highway patrol car shows up and says, hey, we hear you need a ride. Hop in.
Yeah. Well, it becomes a whole lot more proactive than reactive, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
And speeding tickets get to go away.
Right. Because your car is only going to go as fast as it reasonably can or legally can.
Well, I think that number is going to go up dramatically, right? Because if all the cars can communicate, it's speed delta that kills, right? So if you've got one person going 40 and another one going 80, that's bad. And it's just as bad if everyone's going 80 and one person's going 40 as it is if everyone's going 40 and one person's going 80.
Oh, yes.
Also, I read in Car and Driver a couple months ago that speed limits are all out of sync with the capabilities of cars. You know, people go out and they buy a Mustang, big 400 horsepower that can go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds and stop and from 70 and 120 feet. And these capabilities of modern cars with their disc brakes and their suspensions and traction control are all out of sync with speed limits. It's really for the drivers.
It's for the humans,
not the car.
It's for the humans. No, that's totally right. But and that's the thing. I think as soon as you take the drivers out of the equation, you no longer have to wait for this learning curve and drivers to expire and new ones to come in to be comfortable with faster speeds. You just instantly take care of it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with this.
Same. Yeah.
All right.
We don't artificially keep internet speeds lower. There's no reason to continue to keep road speeds lower artificially once you get humans out of the equation.
I'm okay with this. I'll actually feel much safer on the roads knowing that these people that don't know how to drive but have cars aren't in control.
That's right. Yeah. You will know the capabilities of the driver of every car definitively. There will still be problems, but there will be no more guessing about the capabilities of the car versus the person who is driving it or the entity that is driving it.
Yeah, I'm all for this. And hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. We love to fry your brains.
I love how you guys help me build new neural pathways every single day. Dave, thank you for being here as well.
Pleasure.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.